Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and with just 5 days left to Election Day, our political coverage continues today with the candidates for Wisconsin's 69th District Assembly seat. Incumbent Republican Scott Suter of Abbotsford will be with us for the second half hour of the program. Democrat and former newsman Paul Knopf of Neillsville is here for the first half. Representative Suter was first elected to the Assembly in 1998. He serves as the Assembly Majority Leader and sits on the Rules Committee, the Organization Committee, the Joint Committee on Employment Relations, and the Joint Committee on Legislative Organization. He's a former member of the Abbotsford City Council. Paul Knopf is the former news director for Central Wisconsin Broadcasting, with his voice heard every day on WCCN Radio. He has also reported for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin Radio Network, and he currently serves on the Granton School Board and the Clark County Local Emergency Planning Commission. So we've got Democrat Paul Knopf for the next half hour and Republican Scott Suter after that. We're going to be taking your questions and comments live on the air at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And we've got some technical problems in the studio today. So I can't see the computer screen, but I can see the phone line blinking if you're on, and we'll try to get to you as quickly as we possibly can. But be patient. If it rings for a while, sit on it and let it ring, and we will make every effort to pick up the telephone. Paul Knopf, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here.
You're quoted in the Marshfield News Herald, an article today, as saying that you got into this race because of your problems with the state school funding formula, something that stems from your experience as a member of the Granton School Board. Explain that for us.
Well, first of all, you need to point out that school funding is about 40% of the state budget. So it really is the largest single chunk of the state budget, and your state representatives have a huge role to play in determining how that money is dispersed. So I come from an area in Clark County where we have property tax rates in some of our school districts 3 to 4 times higher than other parts of the state, and we spend half as much for every child in our classroom. I could give you specific examples. For instance, the school district of Gibraltar, which is a district in Door County, they've had a tax rate around $2.85 per $1,000 of property, compared to in our district, assembly district, we have some districts as high as $12 to $13 per thousand. The school district of Gibraltar spends over $22,000 for every child in their school, mm-hmm. and we spend between $8,600 and $11,000.
So what's the solution?
Well, I've got a number of ideas. I think the primary idea that I have that would save taxpayers in my assembly district alone by about $2 million annually on their property tax bills would be to take the money that's been pushed into what's called the levy tax credit, and put that money back into the equalization aid formula. Equalization aid is, they've got a formula that's meant to try to make property taxes comparable throughout the state of Wisconsin. But what they've been doing is taking more and more money out of that program and putting into the levy tax credit program. That levy tax credit money never even goes to the school district. It goes right to tax bills. And because it's not dispersed in an equalized manner, it's really bad for our school districts.
Is it good to put so much emphasis on funding our schools with property taxes? You have certain areas, and I'm thinking of inner city areas like Milwaukee. There's some poor rural areas too, where there just isn't the property tax. There isn't the base that you need in order to generate money. So the kids in those areas are growing up at a comparative disadvantage, which doesn't seem fair.
Sure. And just for the record, I would love for my opponent to be here with me today, but my understanding is he preferred to be on by himself. But I'd love to have this discussion, because when we've had this discussion before, he said, well, Paul, the last thing we should do is change the school funding formula because we get outvoted. The fact of the matter is 85% of taxpayers would benefit from pushing that money that's currently in the levy tax credit to the equalized formula. So to your point, I think it's fine to have a certain amount of your property tax money go to your local school district. That money from the state obviously comes from different sources, income and sales tax and, mm-hmm. and everything along those lines. I think if we can make sure that the equalized aid formula and more money is put into equalized aid and general aids, I think it's fine. And all those voters down in the Milwaukee school district that my opponent's going to say would vote against this plan would actually benefit from my idea.
Scott Souter is a powerful guy. He's the Assembly Majority Leader. He's served in the Assembly since 1998.
Yeah.
He's always been considered a shoo-in for re-election, but the district has changed. There's been redistricting, and the 69th suddenly has a big chunk of Marshfield in it. Are you hoping that you're able to find some Democratic votes that might make what some view as kind of a quixotic effort on your part possible?
Yeah, there have been many moments where I'm wondering if I'm chasing around the windmills, you know, in the countryside here. But, you know, Scott is, even Clark County, which is for the most part been the 69th Assembly District in 2008, I think my numbers are correct, 53% won for Obama in Clark County. We've got a lot of people that are very open-minded, independent people. They don't like to be told what to think and what to do. And if you tell them they're a Republican, they're going to tell you, no, I'm not. I'm an independent. So, but Marshfield, when we look at the numbers, does help us. As much as I didn't like the redistricting process, it certainly does help us. I've been knocking on doors constantly. In fact, I just came from knocking doors today, and I've talked to a lot of people that believe it's time for a change in representation. So we're doing our darndest, and we're having a great time doing it. It's been a wonderful experience.
Should redistricting no longer be the province of the Assembly, the Senate, the governor's mansion? Should we have an independent panel?
Absolutely. And look at what Iowa does. Iowa takes all the data. They've got a third party that was already established, very much like the Legislative Reference Bureau here in Wisconsin. That party oversees the process. You take the census data, you stick it in a computer, it develops maps, moving lines as little as possible, and then it churns out 2 to 3 choices that the legislature votes on. Great way to do it.
But you know what? The people in your party have no one to blame but themselves. We had a situation where we had Jim Doyle, and we had Democratic control of the Assembly and the Senate. You could have instituted that a few years ago, and the Democrats didn't do it. And now they're complaining about the way the lines are drawn.
That's true. And I tell you what, if Democrats had control of both the Assembly and Senate and the governor's office, I guarantee you Democrats would have done the same thing. And that's why I think there's a growing move to put that towards a nonpartisan third party. Yeah,
we're talking to Assembly candidate Paul Knopf. He's running as a Democrat against the Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter in Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District. And we have some good news. Our computers have just been restored, so we can actually take some phone calls. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Paul Knopf and if you'd like to talk to Scott Souter, call us in the second half of the show. That's 1-800-780-9742. Act 10, as you know, has been put on hold by a Dane County judge. That's the governor's law, which balanced the budget by removing collective bargaining powers from public workers. It's been widely criticized by Democrats. Are you one of them?
Yes. I think that the way it was handled was far too extreme. It's still tied up in the court system. And you look at all of these changes have been tied up in the court system because of the extreme way they were handled. I'm somebody that has said from the beginning of this campaign that I thought some changes were absolutely necessary with collective bargaining because I sit on a school board and I understand that some changes were necessary. I would have liked to have handled them through the arbitration rules process. I think you would have had a lot less pushback and you could have gotten many of the same concessions that we did through Act 10.
So you accept some of the justification for needing changes to collective bargaining. Again, it's because you sit on that school board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Act 10 has been thrown out, what's it going to do to school board finances? How are you going to be able to come up with the money that you need if you have to negotiate more expensive contracts with your workers?
It's going to be very difficult because, as you know, they cut $1.6 billion from education, and they told us they gave us the tools to balance our budget. The problem was with Act 10, that tool worked for 1 year, and then the second year you don't have any tools left. And so now we're looking at these huge cuts in state aid this year, and we're wondering how we're going to balance our budget. Now if Act 10 is taken off the books, if we have to retroactively go back and maybe pay a different amount for wages and benefits, that's going to have a very crippling effect on our schools and our local municipalities. I still go back to it and think, And I'll tell you something. I was somebody that wasn't gung-ho about the recall. I didn't sign the recall petition because I felt it was just going to continue the chaos that we had. And I thought at that point, you know, we maybe need to go back to ground zero and just try to work on some differences and hammer out some compromise. Having said that, I really wish that this were handled differently. I wish we could go back in time.
Let me ask you a philosophical question. Mm-hmm. Is the right to form a union, to collectively bargain, a fundamental human right for public workers, or is it a privilege and an expensive entitlement, to use Governor Walker's words?
I think the right to association is constitutionally guaranteed. Right. And that's why I think Act 10 might have some difficulty in courts. I know everybody's banking on the state Supreme Court overturning that ruling. At least Republicans are banking on it. But I think there are some real legitimate questions to constitutionality there.
Paul Knopf, he's running for the 69th Assembly seat, which now covers a portion of Marshfield. We have a phone call from Dave in Marshfield. Dave, you're on with Paul Knopf.
Hello. Comment and question, you know, the last 2 years in Wisconsin have been just terrible with the political climate, and it was due to the Republican abusing their total power, because they had so much power they could do whatever they wanted, and but they used a bludgeon to get what they wanted and secrecy documents that were signed. So I'm wondering what kind of attitude and position Paul would take to promote openness in government, for one thing, which the Republicans, they deny, and they call themselves open, but that has not been the case with a minimum number of hearings on some of their controversial bills and things like that. So I'm wondering what Paul, what kind of attitude, of course, he'd be a freshman and not have all that much power, but what position or, you know, attitude he would take towards openness and getting the most he can from the Republicans.
Dave, we got it. And incidentally, are you in the part of Marshfield that's in the 69th district?
Yes, I am.
All right.
It's complicated over there.
Openness in government.
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm running. One of the main reasons I'm running. I think we do have a problem with clean, open, and honest government right now. It seems to be kind of a lost art. And I think one of the problems that we have is the amount of money that flows into politics, and I think that's caused a lot of the secrecy. You know, certainly when we talk about campaign finance reform, look, I'm not naive. I've followed government for years. I know we're never going to get to a point where we don't have any money flowing in to the political campaigns of different candidates. But I'll tell you that I think that the role of money has become more and more apparent to folks that have watched this carefully. And I'm sure some people listening will understand what the group ALEC is, the American Legislative Exchange Council. My opponent is the co-chair of ALEC here in the state of Wisconsin. And for all intents and purposes, most people believe that this is kind of a lobbying group that kind of gets under the radar of lobbying rules. I think we need to ferret out groups like that on both sides. I mean, if there are groups like that that help the Democrats, we need to make sure that everything is above board. And let's, you know, start with a simple move of following open records laws. Start with posting your meetings before you actually go and vote. Peter Barca was in town yesterday, and we were talking with the Assembly Minority Leader about some of the different things that happened in the last legislative session. Just really troubling.
We're talking to Paul Knopf, and let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Francis in Wausau. Francis, you're on Route 51 with Paul Knopf.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, Paul. Thanks for the show tonight. I was just calling because I was wondering, Paul, there's a lot of folks in Madison with different viewpoints. And a lot of times over the last few years, we've seen those viewpoints. So I was wondering how you would work with people to get work done for the people of Wisconsin.
Francis, thanks so much for the phone call. Paul, how can you reach across the aisle? Are you able to somehow bridge the bipartisan divide in what is a very partisan state right now?
Sure, and thank you for the call. You kind of cut out there, but I think I understand what you're getting at. I just want to point out, when I started running for this race, some of my first supporters were actually Republicans, who are my friends in the city of Nielsville, for instance, that really are looking for somebody that is going to be that person that can reach out and kind of heal some of the wounds that we've had. And it's been stated to me many times that right now in the state of Wisconsin, we have a situation where family members can't even talk to one another because of how polarized we've gotten. And again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I've said from day one, with extreme money comes extreme polarization. And I think we need to look at campaign finance laws, campaign funding limits, campaign spending limits, doing what we can within the confines of the First Amendment. But I think that will go a long way to kind of ending this era of polarization.
Paul Knopf running for the 69th District Assembly seat as a Democrat. We'll have his Republican opponent, incumbent Scott Suter on in the second half of the show. Going to take a quick break, then Lois and Marshfield will get to your call. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Mobrig, and my guest for the first half hour, Paul Knopf, running as a Democrat in the 69th Assembly District. Scott Suter will be with us for the second half of the show, the Republican incumbent. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Lois in Marshfield. Lois, you're on with Paul Knopf.
Hi, my name is Lois. I'm from Marshfield. Personally, I love the Affordable Care Act, the new health care law. But I have acquaintances in Marshfield who are very much against it. They call it a government-led program. They talk about ration care for people and that sort of thing. And, Paul, I know you're in favor of health care, but I wonder if you have some specific reasons for that and arguments that I can really use to convince my friends that they're wrong and that health care is more affordable under the new act.
Lois, thanks so much for the call. The governor, of course, is not implementing the exchanges and the Affordable Care Act, at least not at the current time. Paul Knopf, should we be doing that?
Well, I think Republican leadership has already changed their tune a little bit. I think the last I heard from Fitzgerald, I can't remember if it was Brother Jeff or Brother Scott. I think it was Brother Scott. Who said that they're starting to warm up to the idea of actually implementing a Wisconsin-based healthcare exchange. And really, I don't understand why Republicans are so against the healthcare exchange idea, because it's a Republican concept that they actually pushed. Everybody knows that Governor Romney was the first person that kind of came up with this concept. In my mind, it should lower costs through competition. I think that's a good way to handle things. One of the big things that I support in the Affordable Care Act, and almost to a person when I'm knocking on doors, some people have hesitation. Some people aren't sure if they like the Affordable Care Act, but almost everybody likes the fact that people with pre-existing conditions are going to be able to find care. And the Affordable Care Act couldn't guarantee that people with pre-existing conditions, like myself, I had a stroke when I was 26, could get care unless you increase the risk pool. And that's certainly what the Affordable Care Act will do through these healthcare exchanges. But one other quick point, a huge argument people make is this is going to be a government takeover of healthcare. I don't see it that way at all. And they also talk about rationing and having government bureaucracy making your healthcare decisions. Well, who's making your healthcare decisions now? It's a for-profit insurance company making your healthcare decisions. I don't think that that's going to change, of course, in with the Affordable Care Act, because we still will have private insurance companies. But, you know, I think it's a false argument to make.
1-800-780-9742. We've still got a few minutes with 69th Assembly candidate, former newsman Paul Knopf, running as a Democrat against incumbent Scott Suter. Let's talk about mining. Governor tried and Assembly Republicans tried and failed to enact that new state mining law that would have led to a major iron mine in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior. How do you feel about that, about the way the issue was handled? It's obviously something that's being revisited. In fact, I just heard today that Senator Tim Cullen is working on a new proposal to eliminate that one-year cast-in-stone deadline that was in the first bill. So apparently this will be coming up again in the next session.
Yep, and I've said from day one that I don't think mining is a dirty word. I think if we can do mining safely and not harm the environment, and it's good for the local economy, we should move that way. But again, you look at the toxic atmosphere that was created down in Madison, and I think that is what really led to the demise of that first bill. Not to mention, I think there was some bad policy in there. But, you know, Senator Collin is a very moderate individual. In fact, for a moment there, he left the party. He came back on board in a few days. But I have a lot of faith that he and Senator Schultz from the Republican Party and some of the other more moderate Republicans and Democrats are going to sit down and come up with a good compromise that will allow a mining to happen, but also protect the environment and give residents up there a voice in how it happens.
How do you feel about the rules set up for Wisconsin's first wolf hunt? Are hunters being allowed to take too many wolves, too few wolves, or just the right number?
I think it's probably a good quota for the first year. Again, you look at early versions of that bill, and I think even some hunting rights advocates will say that the first version was a little bit too extreme. It was thrown, another bill that was thrown into the court system. Still some questions as to how we move forward here with the wolf hunt or the using dogs to hunt the wolves. And my opponent said that was outrageous to even question if dogs should be allowed to hunt wolves. I don't think it's outrageous. I think we do need to look at some rules for how you hunt with dogs.
Would you favor a statewide hunt for sandhill cranes?
Boy, you know, I haven't given a ton of thought to that one. That's Joel Clayfish's pet bill. My immediate thought is I don't hear a lot of people clamoring for it. So,
how about the state's new concealed carry law? Do you agree with that?
I agree with concealed carry to a point. I would change, in my perfect world, I would change two things. I would change the training requirement. Right now, there's kind of an arbitrary four-hour training requirement that even the attorney general says you can't really defend or make sure that people are following those rules. What I would like to see done is treat it a lot like a driver's license. So you have to prove you know how to use a gun and you know when you can use a gun.
What about other gun rights provisions, things like the Castle Doctrine law, the Stand Your Ground law? Is that something we should look at in Wisconsin?
I think it's law. It's one of those situations I just don't think that I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. Castle Doctrine really just reiterated something that was already in common law. I mean, you can already defend yourself. I think it was a little bit of piling on, but I've got an interesting story. You know, going to visit my
Paul.
Going to visit my relatives down in Milwaukee, and all the houses looked the same in this neighborhood. And last year, I knocked on a door and went inside, and sure enough, it wasn't my in-law's house. And I just think with the Castle Doctrine now, somebody could have shot me to death. My children would be without a father right now, and there would be no repercussions.
Let's take one more phone call for Paul Knopf, and we have Tim from Neillsville. Hello, Tim.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the time. Paul, thanks for being on the radio for us. Paul, I've known Paul for a number of years, but as a public educator, my concern, and I've lived in the 69th Assembly all my life, my biggest concern is maintaining a high quality of public education for all of our students here in this area. I grew up in Greenwood, taught at Owen Withy, and now I'm at Neillsville, and I absolutely love the areas. How can you, Paul, help us maintain high quality education here in our local areas while still being able to help our residents with property taxes that, frankly, a lot of people are struggling with as well? So I'll take my comments off air, and I thank you for your time.
Sure. And I kind of touched on this before, but I think changing the school funding formula would help a lot, not only for the quality of education, but also for property taxes. And as I mentioned, by moving some of the money that's currently allotted for the levy tax credit program into the equalization aid formula. And, Glenn, we've got the dial signal on there right now.
Oh, boy. Thank you.
No problem. We've moved that money into the equalization aid formula. That's going to drive down property taxes locally. But also just a couple other things. I think a state representative has a big role to play in working with school boards. And quite frankly, I think that's something that Representative Souter has not done very well. He has not conversed with us as school boards. We're in an area, my hometown of Granton, Neillsville, Loyal, and Greenwood, in 10 years lost the equivalent of the entire Loyal student body in student enrollment. So we're going to have to come up with some more innovative ways to move education forward. And I think state representatives, state lawmakers have a role to play there by giving school districts some more options to work together.
Got a one more philosophical question for you, Paul Knopf, and then we're going to have to say goodbye to you. I'm going to ask you one question real quick. Do you take global warming seriously? climate change seriously. We've had a string of very hot summers, the past winter unusually warm, which devastated the Northwoods tourist economy, our farms devastated by prolonged drought. Now we have Hurricane Sandy. Do you think this is man-made, and if so, should we be pushing toward renewable energy?
Well, one thing I don't like is when climate change deniers, they get a cold day in June and they say, look, global warming's not happening. And I don't care for it necessarily when folks that really believe strongly in global warming look at one specific weather event and say, look, this proves global warming. But I think what we do see is a pattern. Just use your common sense. The weather is different now than it was even when I was a kid, which wasn't that long ago, you know, 15, 20 years ago. I do think we have an issue with global warming, and I think people are starting to, bad pun intended, starting to warm up to that reality. Now, how we go about dealing with it, I think there's going to be a lot of controversy in how we go about dealing with it, but yeah.
When you make decisions in Madison, are you going to be more concerned about how those decisions affect the taxpayers of Wisconsin, or about how those decisions may affect those who are too poor to pay taxes?
Well, I think my first goal is going to be ask myself, is this good for my district? You know, that I think has to be the first question a state representative asks on most issues. There are some issues where you make your decision simply on principle and that sort of thing. But as former President Clinton says, when you make all your decisions based on principle or hard and fast ideology, you make up your mind before you get the evidence, and that's a terrible way to make a decision, I think. So I would definitely look at what's good for my constituents and then use pragmatism to make my decisions.
Paul Knopf, thanks for being with us.
It's been great.
Paul Knopf, former newsman, running for the 69th Assembly seat as a Democrat. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter, the incumbent Republican in the 69th District, will be with us, and we'll be taking your phone calls. At number again, if you'd like to get in line, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig, and we are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We just heard from Democrat Paul Knopf, who is running for the 69th Assembly seat. And with us for the remainder of the show is the Assembly Majority Leader, Representative Scott Souter, who was first elected in 1998. Is that correct, Scott?
That's correct, sir.
And served before that on the Abbotsford City Council.
That's correct.
And you are running for re-election, so why don't we start with that? Why should the voters in the 69th Assembly District put you in office for another 2 years?
Well, sure, Glenn. Thanks for having us here. So this is a great chance to both talk to people and have a chance to sort of debate between the two of us. Look, I'm asking for people to take a look at my record. I'm running on my record. We're running a positive campaign based on what we promised and what I promised 2 years ago, and what I delivered during that time period. And I promised 2 years ago that I would solve the state's massive $3.6 billion deficit without raising taxes. Some people said, that's not going to happen. You know, good luck. But we did. We did. And now, as a result, and as a result of the reforms that we instituted, we have a $342 million budget surplus. So we solved that, but we also did the right thing in terms of our most vulnerable, in terms of protecting their interests, protecting health care for women and seniors and others, and that's important as well. So I think we made the right decisions. But I'm asking people for the chance to be their voice in Madison, to rehire me based on my record and based on what I promised 2 years ago. And I'm getting a very, very positive response as a result.
Paul Knopf told us that the main reason he's running is because he's got problems with the school funding program, the school funding formula. Which he thinks shortchanges some districts and favors others. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to his remarks on the way in.
Sure,
if you could respond to those.
Yeah, and again, look, I think my opponent and I disagree on some things. I still am waiting to see his plan. I know that he has talked about the levy tax credit, which will involve about $2 million, but we are talking about a major portion of the state budget here. And what individual legislators have to look at is the state percentage of state support that their districts get. If you look at the percentage of state support, and that really is the money that comes into the district, if you look at the entire district for the 69th Assembly District, almost to a school district, we have at least two-thirds or more of state school support. I think that's important. I want to keep that. I want to expand that. Even my hometown of Abbotsford gets 79.86% state support. Granton, my opponent's hometown, gets 68.25% state support. Marshfield, 61.75%. I think that's important. And while my opponent may want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, I think it's important to get as much state support as you possibly can. And if there are going to be changes, they have to be done in with a partnership between Democrats and Republicans alike. But it has to be done in the right way. And you can't simply say, you know what, we're going to change the system and roll the dice. That is very dangerous for rural school districts.
Incumbent Republican Scott Suter, the Assembly Majority Leader, running for re-election in the 69th Assembly District. And if you'd like to ask Representative Suter a question, if you've got a comment, 1-800-780-9742 is the phone number. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now, so you can get right in. Let's talk about Act 10.
Sure.
Same question I asked Paul Knopf. It's been put on hold by a Dane County judge. Give me your perception of that and what that means for the state.
Well, I am absolutely confident that Act 10 will be deemed constitutional by the Supreme Court. This is a stunt by an activist judge in Dane County who wants to make a name for himself and, frankly, is playing politics with it. I don't think it's a coincidence that this was done during an election cycle, but the fact is, this is constitutional. I'm very confident that this will prevail, and I stand by my vote. I absolutely stand by my vote. I'm still waiting. I've asked time after time my opponent to say if there was an up or down vote to repeal Act 10, which I'm sure someone will come up with, would he vote to repeal Act 10? And he refuses to take a stand, and that's his choice. But I stand by my record. We have saved over $2 billion statewide as a result of our reforms. That is important to schools. It's important to local municipalities. And frankly, it's the right thing to do.
The act is unpopular with a number of union workers. And I'm going to ask the same question that I asked Paul Knopf, a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
Is the right to form a union to collectively bargain a fundamental human right for public workers? Or is it a privilege and an expensive entitlement, which are the words that Governor Walker has used?
Well, if you look at the law, collective bargaining is a legislative privilege. It was created by the legislature, and so it is a legislative privilege by law. Now, if others want to call it a human right, or like my opponent said, it's a constitutional right, I don't see that in the Constitution. Perhaps I'm reading a different Constitution, but what the law states and what happened with regard to collective bargaining is the legislature created it. And it is a legislative privilege, and there's no other way around it. We have not eliminated all collective bargaining. Workers can still bargain for wages, and I think that's important.
Up to the cost of living,
that
right?
That is correct, but they can still bargain. So for those that are out there saying, we got rid of it entirely, that is simply not true.
But what about teachers who say we also ought to be able to bargain for working conditions? Because there are some schoolrooms that are unsafe. There are some legitimate concerns that we might have, and maybe we should be able to have a collective voice on them.
Well, you know, if that is the situation, then they can, one, call their state representatives and certainly talk about it with them, and they can also talk to their school board members. Look, they can have an open discussion, and I think any reasonable school board and school board member is going to say, look, let's take a look at this, let's sit down and let's talk about it, but I'm not sure it necessarily has to be a point of collective bargaining. Look, there are individuals that are on school boards who do a very, very good job and are looking out for not only the taxpayers, but also for the health interests of their school and school employees.
1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Assembly Majority Leader Republican Scott Suter, let's go to Lois in Marshfield. Lois, you're on Route 51.
Yes.
Yes, Lois, you're on the radio.
Okay, hi. This is Lois from Marshfield.
Hey, Lois.
Lois, you called up in the first half of the show, correct?
I did.
Well, you get to ask a question of both candidates.
It's giving equal time to both candidates.
All right, fire away.
My question concerns redistricting. I live in Marshfield. I used to have two great representatives, and now I've lost both a senator, a state senator, and a state representative that I dearly love. My city has been divided in half. There was a lot of secrecy involved in drawing the new lines. I understand that it was a costly court battle to decide that two districts in Milwaukee were not being fair to minorities, so I'm sure my money went to solve that. I'm just wondering how you can justify the secrecy and the confusion, the mass confusion and the division that this redistricting recently has brought about.
Lois, thanks so much for your phone call. Representative Souter.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with Lois's premise. I thank her for her phone call. But look, redistricting has to happen by law every 10 years. It is a constitutional charge of the legislature. This has happened under Democrats and Republicans. And the redistricting is not based on personalities or, it's based on amounts of population, and it's based on fairness for the state of Wisconsin in terms of what overall the state of Wisconsin looks like, to make sure that equal representation is achieved and to make sure that minority representation is also fair.
But you've got a lot of leeway about how you put those lines, don't you?
Well, if you draw the map, that's true. However, I didn't draw the map. Our speaker drew the map, and we did get input. And, of course, my input was I liked it the way it was. So I didn't get everything I wanted.
You think the new district might hurt you a little bit? It's made it less Republican, according to some observers, by putting in a chunk of Marshfield.
If you look at the numbers, it is clearly more advantageous to my opponent in terms of pure numbers. I would argue on the issues and a lot of other things that matter to people, that is negated. But, yes, if you look at the raw numbers, sure, it's better for Democrats, but –
this is another point I made in the first half of the show. The Democrats could have changed this 4 or 5 years ago when they were in control of both houses and the governor's mansion. They didn't. Right. Having said that, doesn't it make sense to have an independent bureau, a judicial bureau, what have you, like they do in Iowa, to try to come up with lines that are less partisan?
I don't agree. I think you have to have accountability, and I did take the vote. I voted for redistricting. Because I thought for the entire state of Wisconsin and for minorities and for equal representation, it was fair. You know, there are certain things that I didn't like. Like I said, I would have preferred to have my old district. But you don't get everything you want in the legislature. You fight, for what you can and you have input. But when you don't draw the maps, you don't always get what you want. But I don't agree with an independent, panel because who's going to appoint them? Is it going to be the governor? What accountability are they going to have? I like individuals to have accountability so that individuals, if they don't like something, they can go to the person who took the vote and say, I don't like what you did, here's why. Or I like what you did, and here's why. An unaccountable, nameless, faceless panel member, I don't believe they're going to care, and I don't believe they're going to be accountable.
But let's talk about this map. Why cut the city of Marshfield in half? Why lop Stevens Point out of the 7th Congressional District when it's been there for, 100 years? Why make those kinds of drastic changes?
Well, the congressional map, you'll have to talk to the congressman. In terms of the overall map, in terms of drawing those lines, you would have to talk to the Speaker of the State Assembly. My mission, and for those of us that took a look at the map, we had to look at it as a whole to make sure it was fair to minorities, it was fair for equal representation, and it was fair for the state of Wisconsin. And overall, yes, I think it was fair, and a bipartisan 3-judge federal panel said yes as well, barring 2 Latino districts, which has been solved. But you got to look at fairness. And I understand that there are those that don't like certain portions of the map, but it is a constitutional charge that we have to do. It is something that is never easy, and there are always individuals that but no one's being disenfranchised. That's really the point here. No one's being disenfranchised. Individuals may not have the same representative, but they have the same representation. And
they're still able to vote.
They're still able to vote. They still have, and in this case for Marshfield, they're going to have even more individuals being able to fight for their interests in Madison.
That's one way to look at it. Marshfield will have 2 representatives instead of just 1.
And whomever they are, we're all going to get together. We're going to get along, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, and we're going to fight for central Wisconsin. That is the point, no matter who gets elected. And I think that really needs to happen. So we'll have new representation, yes, but I think we're going to have even more powerful force for central Wisconsin.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Chris in Wausau. Chris, you're on Route 51 with Scott Souter.
Hi, Scott. I was Actually, born and raised in a very similar area as the Wausau area. I work there now. My question actually is comparing two points. I've got young children that are in school, and I keep seeing issues with education and the cost of education, and also that, you know, the teachers really feel like they're in a bind because of what they're going to be held to for educational standards. But I oftentimes feel that their hands are tied, and as a taxpayer and parent, one of the concerns that I have is with the mainstreaming of children that have difficulties through the No Child Left Behind situation, which I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. But oftentimes the kids can be very disruptive in the classes where my kids have had them in there. And the teacher is trying to teach a lesson, and the kids come home, and I'll hear about how one of these kids with a learning disability has disrupted the class. So now they are missing out on what the educational program was supposed to offer. And my concern about public school with that issue is kind of the idea of public school is to create educated individuals who can go out into the world and become taxpayers to refinance the
help out the economy,
school system.
Hey, Chris, we got it. Scott Suter, No Child Left Behind, and the impact on our public schools.
You know, that is a really good question, but I think it's more appropriately posed to your federal representatives, because No Child Left Behind is not something we vote on. I think there are good portions and not so great portions of No Child Left Behind, and I think, you know, Democrats and Republicans need to get together to solve those. Look, our mission here in the state, and my mission as a state representative, is to put more money in the classroom, less in bureaucracy, to give more options to school boards and more control over their own budgets, which we have. But yes, he's got a point. Look, educators and school districts are burdened by federal regulations, particularly with regard to special education, and that does need to change. Unfortunately, neither Paul nor I will, while we can weigh in on it, we will not be the ones voting on that. And you know, I know that's very confusing, but that is a lot of those federal regulations are very, very burdensome. And
but they
and
impact
he's right.
you on the state and local level.
They do, and they cost us money. They cost us money, and you know, but we have to find ways to make our schools more efficient in terms of putting more money in the classroom. But at the same time, look, we've achieved savings as a result of our reforms. If you look at the savings, total for the assembly district and school savings, almost $4 million. And that's a pretty good chunk of change. And we wouldn't have had those savings had we not had the Act 10 reforms.
I've talked to some educators who say that those savings have hurt their schools.
I've talked to a lot of superintendents, and I've talked to a lot of taxpayers, and I've talked to a lot of school board members have said, thank you. They've said, look, you finally have given us the tools to manage our own budgets, and you've saved us money, and now we're able to do a better job. And at the same time, our choice that was given was, look, you give pink slips and you lay people off, which we didn't. They did that in California, which was a mistake. Or you ask for reasonable concessions from all state employees, including myself. And I still maintain I do not believe it is too much to ask for state employees to give 5.8% toward their pension and around 12% for their health care premiums. And, you know, some have even said, you know, that is fair. Some are saying, no, it's not. And it is a chunk of change. But we had a $3.6 billion state deficit, and we solved it. We said we weren't going to raise taxes, and we did achieve savings. I think that's important.
Republican Scott Suter will be back with more of your questions after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest for the next 8 minutes, Representative Scott Suter. He is an incumbent Republican in the 69th Assembly District. We heard from his opponent, Democrat and former newsman Paul Knopf, in the first half hour. And if you would like to get a phone call in, we could still probably squeeze a couple in at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's get your perspective on what's going on with mining. The governor tried, and Assembly Republicans tried and failed to enact that new state mining law that would have led to the big iron mine in the Pinoki Hills. How do you feel about how all of that played out? Mm-hmm. And this is something that apparently is going to come up again. We have news that Senator Tim Cullen, who's viewed as a moderate Democrat, has a new proposal that would eliminate the one-year cast in stone, you know, get it done in a year or don't get it done at all provision in the original bill. How do you think that's going to play out, and what would you support?
Well, I supported our original bill, which we passed in the state assembly, and it is a very good piece of legislation. I know there's those out there that don't agree with mining at all, and they're throwing out a lot of red herrings, saying it is not good. What we passed wasn't good for the environment. Well, what we passed strikes a balance between job creation, which we absolutely need in the state, and these are thousands and thousands of very good-paying jobs, and environmental regulations. No environmental regulation is reduced as a result of our bill. In fact, it's strengthened. So I believe our bill, it was the right thing to do. We did make changes. We did make reforms and made it stronger. Those who are saying that the mining company wrote the bill are wrong. There were legislators and a whole host of individuals, including the DNR, who had input, and the DNR themselves. And I've not been, the best friend of the DNR. I'm not on their Christmas list, but they stated that it was the right thing to do for the environment. And so I believe that we will come back, pass the bill that we passed in the state assembly. And I believe it is a very good bill that strikes a balance between the environment, and our goal is to make sure we get those jobs here, not in Minnesota or Michigan.
So you think the original bill is going to come back? Of course,
it is.
That depends on how the elections go. But
yeah, I want to bring back mining in January as majority leader. Now we can sit down, and we will sit down with Democrats and Republicans alike and talk about concerns. But I stand by the bill that we passed because it is the right thing to do for the environment. And we will work with Senator Cullen and others. But the fact is, there's a good bill sitting there. We should pass it, and those jobs should be here right now. We should allow for that to happen. But let me just say this, please, that this bill does not automatically authorize mining. It allows for the process to be streamlined so that a mining company that comes here isn't waiting 6 or 8 years for a permit. No company is going to do that. So they needed streamlining to make sure that they have a chance to actually put shovels in the ground.
How do you feel about the rules that have been set up for Wisconsin's first wolf hunt? I was at that hearing mm-hmm. with the DNR down in Stevens Point, and you were pretty critical about the fact that apparently the rules aren't taking as many wolves out of our forests as you would like to see.
Sure, and I do think the quota should have been higher. But look, we sat down with the DNR, we sat down with the experts from the wolf management plan, and we did this right. We made certain that we didn't run the risk of having U.S. Fish and Wildlife put wolves back on the endangered species list. We did the right thing, and while I would have wanted, in a perfect world, to have more wolves, we needed to get the first season under our belts, and we were willing to compromise. I think things are going along very well. I don't like the fact we have animal rights activists out there suing in a crazy lawsuit in Madison, but the fact is the wolf hunting season is working, and this is going to be here for the long haul, and we are not going to decimate the wolf population.
This past summer was another in a string of the hottest summers on mm-hmm. record. Past winter, unusually warm. We had temperatures of 60 degrees at my home in Merrill. No snow on the ground. It devastated the tourist economy. We had drought that hurt a lot of farmers. And people are saying, some scientists are saying, this is due to climate change, global warming. They're pointing to Hurricane Sandy, a, quote, unprecedented event. Do you take them seriously, and should we take them seriously? Should we be moving forward with more green energy and more renewable sources like wind power?
Let me take your first question. I am skeptical of the man-made global warming theory. In fact, if you look at some scenarios and some scientists, and in fact a number of them out there, are saying that we're actually in a cooling period. So, you know, that's a debate for, you know, scientists and experts, but I will not base my votes on any type of carbon footprint that is caused by humans. I do not buy that argument. I don't think it belongs in the legislature. We need to base our votes on science, not science fiction. And to answer your second question, I think it's important to be ready for situations like that. We have FEMA on the federal side. We have disaster relief assistance on the state side. We need to make sure that we are prepared for things like that. But, you know, I don't buy this argument that, you know, this is as a result of man-made global warming. No.
When you make decisions in Madison, Representative Souter, how do you balance the needs of taxpayers and the needs of citizens who are too poor to pay taxes?
Well, there are things we can do. If you look at our tax structure right now, we do need to simplify it. There is absolutely no reason that someone who is a lower wage earner should have to hire an accountant to do their taxes. That's insane. So we need to streamline that and reform our tax structure. There are things we can do, and I think we need to do things that are more fair and more reasonable and get government out of the way in instances like that.
Scott Souter, incumbent Republican assemblyman for the 69th Assembly District, the Assembly Majority Leader. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you
really appreciate it. Paul Knopf, his Democratic opponent, was with us for the first half hour. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Heading your way at 7 o'clock tonight on this station, live from Superior, the second and final Wisconsin Public Radio debate in the 7th Congressional District between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Kreitlow. Don't forget to vote this coming Tuesday, November 6th, and this coming Thursday, Route 51 features an hour of post-election analysis with UW Stevens Point political scientist Ed Miller and Wausau Daily Herald opinion page editor Robert Menser. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, until next week, we're heading out of town.